This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. And remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. And we have good in abundance because you have consciously and conscientiously tuned into the joy of living with your humble host, Barry Shore, B-A-R-R-Y-S-H-O-R-E, Barry Shore. And you have made the decision to seek out and become the best you possible. That's the reason you're here listening. The only reason you're listening is because you care the most in the whole world about you. And that's good, because when you become the best you possible, you make the world a better place. You make the world harmonious, loving, kind, filled with joy and happiness. And you are listening to the joy of living carried over this magical, mystical, mythical platform called Internet Radio. And you are being hosted by K4HD.com. So any questions you want to have, just put them up on the board. And you are joined with 280,124 people around the world who have tuned into the joy of living with Barry Shore, because again, you care most about you, and you know that on this particular show, that you will become healthier, wealthier, and wiser by listening to the people that we bring to you every week. But this week is unique. This week features someone dear to me for decades, someone who has inspired me. If there's anything you like about Barry Shore and what he brings to the world, you are going to meet one of the major reasons for my being so positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant in this world. So get ready, put on your seatbelts, because this show will just be that which brings you more joy than you could possibly express in a month of Sundays as the contracts go. So here we go. You remember on this show, everybody knows that we work with the three fundamentals of life. Those three fundamentals are, number one, life. Your life has purpose. Every life has purpose. And when you live in a purposeful, driven world, the corollary of that is you can go mad. Now, in this case, MAD is a great acronym because it stands for Go Make a Difference. When you lead a purposeful life, you make a difference in the world. And it can be small, it can be large, but every difference makes a difference in the world. And you make the world a better place because of that. And the third part of the three fundamentals is that you, by uncovering, unlocking the power and the secrets of everyday words and terms, you can bring about the kind of world we all want to live in, because you will be thinking, speaking, and acting in a positive, purposeful, powerful, pleasant way. Simple example, www. If you ask anybody, what does WW stand for? They'll tell you it has something to do with the internet. And factually speaking, they're correct. But in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant, WWW stands for, drumroll, fanfare, da-dun, da-da. What a wonderful world. And what is a word? W-H-A-T-A. What a wonderful world. Tip of the hat, of course, to Satchmo Louis Armstrong for enabling that song to go not just viral, but to touch hundreds of millions, if not billions of people around the planet. And whenever you hear the opening bars of that song, what a wonderful world. Right away, what do? You have a smile on your face. You can't help it. And smile is one of the most important, powerful, and inspirational acronyms that you'll ever learn. So learn this and incorporate it in your very being. SMILE, S-M-I-L-E, stands for Seeing Miracles in Life Every Day. Seeing miracles in life every day. Now, invariably, when I'm speaking to people, whether it's 50 or 5,000, and right now I have 10, 12, 14 questions up on the board, people say to me, but Barry, sure, I've been out for hours already. I haven't seen any miracles. And I ask them, are you here? Can you hear? Can you see? Do you have water to drink? Do you have food to eat? Do you have a place to sleep? Do you have family? Do you have friends? Those are all miracles, miraculous way of living. Now, how can I prove that to you? Very simple. More than a million people did not get out of bed this morning. They died. You didn't. You're here. You're listening. The fact that you're alive gives you the ability to live in this world and to go mad, to go make a difference. And as most of you know, we have about 240,000 people listening every week, but there's another 40-plus thousand that come in because their friends say, you got to listen to The Joy of Living with Barry Shore because it's an upbeat and very helpful kind of hour that you can invest in yourself. So most of you know the story, but just for those who don't, so let me see, on September 17, 2004, I was standing up in the morning, just like I hope 99.99% of everybody listening, hale and hearty, able to leave tall buildings in a single bound. That evening, I was in the hospital, paralyzed from my neck down. I became known as what's known as a quadriplegic. That means that nothing on my body moved. I was completely paralyzed, and it was not from an automobile accident or a spinal injury. It was a rare disease that took over my body in a matter of hours, and I was completely paralyzed. Nothing in the body moved. I was in hospital many months. I was in a hospital bed in my own home for 2 years. I couldn't turn over by myself. I was in a wheelchair for 4 years. I had braces on both my legs, from my hips to my ankles, and that was progress. And now, thank God, today, I am vertical ambulatory, albeit with the help of a 6.5-foot walking wand made for me by a Zen master. So I'm a triped, not a biped. And I still can't walk up a stair by myself or a curb, and I have health 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you hear my voice. My voice is positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. Why? Because I've learned to be able to see miracles in life every day. Every day. Now, I have to share with you what my 8-year-old niece came over to me a couple of weeks ago and said to me, Uncle Barry, can we spell smile S-M-I-E-L? And I thought about it, smile, smile, why not? And I asked her, how come? And she says, because then it would stand for seeing miracles in everyday life. Out of the mouth of babes. Isn't that wonderful? Because when you do be able to see miracles in your life every day, in your everyday life, then you do what we call neuro-linguistic programming. And you start thinking good, speaking good, acting good. And when you do that, you make the world a better place. You are going mad. And when you do that, you create the kind of world we all want to live in. CREATE is a wonderful acronym, by the way. CREATE stands for causing, rethinking, enabling all to excel. Causing, rethinking, enabling all to excel. Now, everybody has a brain, thank God. And your brain, you have 50 billion brain cells. You have a trillion synapses connecting them all. And they're there for more than just to decide what kind of latte you want this morning. They are there to be able for us to think in a positive, purposeful, powerful, pleasant way, and therefore bring about benefit in the world. And we're going to be able to learn benefit by knowing and saying these two words. And I'm going to ask you, if you say these two words consciously and conscientiously 3 times a day for the rest of your life, you will make a difference in the world. And these two words are, drum roll, fanfare, da-dun, da-da. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank stands for to harmonize and network kindness. To harmonize and network kindness. The Dalai Lama has been quoted as saying, and I read in his writings, be kind whenever possible. And it's always possible. Just think about it. You're going to your coffee shop, and we're all able to go back to coffee shops and order. And you go in, you order your fancy latte for $5.50, and someone brings it to you. You say, thank you. You go into your fancy coffee shop, and you order your fancy latte, and somebody doesn't bring it to you. You go up to the counter, and they say, oh, I'm so sorry, we forgot, and we'll bring it to you later. Another few minutes goes by, they bring it to you. Still say, thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop, and it's raining out. Somebody holds the door open for you. Thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop and someone slams the door on you. Thank you. You're in traffic. You're late for an appointment and someone cuts you off. You say, Thank you. You get up in the middle of the night and you stub your toe and it hurts. Oh, thank you. To harmonize and network kindness. Think stands for to harness insightful neural connections. To harmonize and network kindness. Kind stands for keep inspiring noble deeds. And I cannot think of another human being, excuse me, in my life that exemplifies the idea of keep inspiring noble deeds than one of my dearest, oldest friends in the world. And I'm going to ask him to say a huge hello right now. His name is Dr. Hubie Jones. Hubie, would you be kind enough to say a big hello to 280,124 people around the world?
Hello, this is Hubie Jones from Massachusetts, outside of Boston.
Hubie Jones is the exemplar of what it means to live a life of purpose and make a difference. If I start reading his CV right now, it will take us to the end of the show. So I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to highlight just a couple of things. Then we're going to go right deep into Hubie because I want you to hear his voice, his being, and what he is and does and what resonates in the world. On the most fundamental level, he is a charter trustee and a senior advisor and the social justice entrepreneur in residence of a very important organization called City Year, Inc. He's also the Dean Emeritus of Boston University School of Social Work, which is a major deal in the world. He is the founder and president of the Boston Children's Chorus, so he knows all about harmony through music and song. And in my humble opinion, one of the most important parts of his CV is that he's married to amazing Catherine for 53 years. They have 8 children, 11 grandchildren, and growing. But for me to introduce Hubie now and then ask him to start speaking about a question I'm going to ask him is that Hubie, I have known since the age of 15, and chronologically, I'm 71 right now. And at the age of 15, Hubie made me a millionaire at the age of 15. And what I'd like to do right now is introduce my dear friend, Dr. Hubie Jones, to speak about what it is that he does in the world on a day-to-day basis in reaching out, creating programs, and helping tens of thousands of families that otherwise may not have the kind of opportunities that exist in the world, except for the fact that Hubie has created these platforms that allow people to use what is available in this, the most wealthy country in the history of the world, and therefore fulfill their potential. My dear, beloved friend, Hubie Jones, talk to us about what it means to go out in the world and bring your love and kindness to the world.
Well, I've been fortunate enough. First of all, I'm a social worker. I'm also a black man. And I also am a father and a husband. And those are three important things about me. I had the great pleasure of meeting Barry when he was 15 years old, when I was a social group worker at the Boston Children's Service Association, where I ran neighborhood clubs. And the neighborhood clubs would have a young person referred to us who had some difficulties, either physically handicapped or having some emotional problems. And we would go into the neighborhood and find other young people to join this club. And in Brookline, there was a young man who was having some difficulties. And that led to having really some peer group problems. And I went in and found Barry Shaw and said, look, this is what this club is about, and we need you. And the thing that I first understood was this was a young person with empathy. And he was a person who would be there and present for a young person who was having difficulty getting along with peers and having his own emotional problems. And so he, with this club, help this young man ultimately move on to become a very successful person. And so that's how I met Barry Shore. And I have thought about him for years. And every time I pass the street in Brookline that he lived on, I think about him. And I suddenly got a call from him recently, and here we are connected again.
And by the way, let me interrupt for just one moment, Hubie. I got to make people understand that was 56 years ago.
Exactly.
Because there is no time and space when you're dealing with the heart, when you're dealing with the basis of life, the soul, then there is no time and space. Nothing separates great people, right, Hubie? And that's your genius. That's what you bring to the world. Hubie has founded so many amazing programs because he is a pure soul. On the outside, he said he's black. By the way, it just happens to be that I'm what other people call white. I'm Caucasian. But so there's no color involved when you're talking about the soul. It's the essence of his being. He is the ultimate giver in life. And as I said, he made me a millionaire, a multimillionaire when I was 15. I just didn't realize it enough, and it had nothing to do with money, because true wealth has nothing to do with money. He enabled me to open my eyes as a young man. And Hubie went on to become this giant in the world. So tell us about one or two of the programs that you have been able to start, foster, grow, and what it's meant for the community of Boston and around the world.
Well, first of all, when I was the director of the Roxbury Multi-Service Center in Boston, we had, this was a program, a social service agency that served the community, and folks came to us who had all kinds of problems, and we were seeing parents come to us whose kids were being bounced out of the Boston public schools illegally because the schools were saying that the kids were too disturbed, too retarded, too difficult to deal with, and they basically told the parents, don't bring your kid back to school.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so the social workers in the agency came to me and said, look, we're seeing a lot of this. This is a pattern, and something has to be done about it. As fast as we get these kids back into school, because in some cases we had a mental health unit, and we do an evaluation of these kids, and we would find that 85% of them were not so retarded or so emotionally disturbed that they couldn't function in a regular classroom. And so we go to the school and say, no, this young person can function in a regular classroom if certain things were being done to support them. In some cases, the schools were so destructive, we raise money to get these kids into private schools. So suddenly the social workers came to me and said, Hubie, look, this is a systemic problem. And you like to jack people up who aren't doing the right thing. So why don't you do something about this problem, because it's systemic? So I said, okay. So I called together a group of social workers and psychiatrists and psychologists from a whole set of helping agencies in the greater Boston area to come to the Roxbury Multi-Service Center, where we could talk about, are you seeing the same problem of kids excluded from school? And they said within a few minutes, yeah, we're seeing the same problem. It's not a problem endemic to the black community of Roxbury. And so I said, okay, we have to do something about it. So we formed the Task Force on Children Out of School. And I raised some money, got a young man who was getting a doctorate at Brandeis University's Heller School, who got interested in the problem and said, look, I can do this. I have a national Institute of Mental Health Fellowship for my doctoral program. I can do this for free if I can use some of the data that I get for my doctoral dissertation. I said, terrific, that's a good deal. So Larry Brown, Dr. Larry Brown, who I still am connected with, let us study, raise some money to do it, and after a year, we had the results. 10,000 young people, students in the Boston Public Schools, were excluded from school. 10,000.
Woo!
10,000. And when this came blazing across the front pages of the Boston Globe and the Boston Herald and so forth, it stunned the Boston community. So we had taken a social condition that had existed for a long time and lifted it up to the level of a social problem. Okay? As a result of that, David Bartley, who was then the Speaker of the House in the State House, in legislature, called us up and said, look, wow, what an important study you've done. Would you send me 500 copies so I can share it with the legislature and some of the community groups that I'm associated with? We said, fine, absolutely. We sent it. We sent him the 500 copies. A week later, he called us up and said, look, I'm really interested in doing something about special education and making sure that kids who have special needs are educated within the mainstream of schools. Would you come in and help us write a piece of legislation that would guarantee that all kids with special needs in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts would get education in the mainstream of schooling? And for kids who couldn't be handled that way, that there would be money for them to get private schooling as well. So we said, fine. So he came in, had this legislation written, and it was passed. Chapter 766, the special education law in Massachusetts, the first one in the nation to guarantee children with special problems, special needs, education. And as a result of this, we began to get kids back into school, and particularly for kids who were Latino, because 7,600 of the 10,000 were kids who were Latino, and they were not in school because there were no bilingual educational programs.
Wow.
To really serve them.
I'd like to interrupt just for one moment, because we have lots of questions up on the board, and many of them are running around the same issue. And I want to emphasize something to everybody. Again, I am privileged to know this amazing man, Dr. Hubie Jones. I want to emphasize two things that you said, Hubie, because you repeated them, and you know what you're saying, but I want everybody else to understand, because remember, they tune into the joy of living because they want to become the best you possible. You said these words. Somebody came to you and said, do something about it. And then you said, further after a few more minutes, we want to do something about it. The ability to take action, not just to see a situation, bemoan it, or concerned about it, or just say, isn't it bad? But to do something, I believe in my heart, is the hallmark of Hubie Jones. It is what you gave me as my inheritance. This is what you bequeathed to a 15-year-old boy, which is worth multiple, many millions of dollars. It's the ability to take action when there's something that needs to be done and corrected. And look what he did. The first legislation in the nation, the first legislation in the United States of America that guaranteed to help all kids with education.
The thing that was important, Barry, here is that this model was taken by Marion Wright Edelman, the head of the Children's Defense Fund, and then the national law was passed 2 years later.
Okay?
So the thing that's interesting is that from a small social service agency in the black community of Roxbury, we ended up having an impact not only on policy in the state, but also in the nation. Okay?
And that's the genius of this. By the way, again, only because I have to put things in context for people, because they're listening from all over the world, by the way, Hubie. I mean, we have people listening in right now in India, in Hong Kong, even in mainland China, in Latin America, and in Canada, and throughout Europe, in Africa, people all over the world listening. So I just want to emphasize two things. Anything and everything you want to know about Hubie Jones, and there's lots that you want to know, because you should be following more about this amazing man and his legacies and what he's doing. All you have to do is go to my website, because everything will be there. You don't have to remember anything else. www, remember what that stands for, what a wonderful world, .barryshore.com. BarrySHore. Go to barryshore.com so you can listen to this again, which you want to do. You want to share this with at least five people, because then over a million people will be hearing it around the world. You certainly want to do that, because you want to understand that Hubie Jones didn't all just do things by himself. He worked always with other people. He was that glue that bound everybody together, but it's because he took action, doing something, recognizing the ability to make things happen, just because he wasn't looking at the odds. He was just saying, let's do something, because it wasn't right. He wants to fix the world in the most positive way. He fixed himself. He fixed the world. He gave this 15-year-old white boy, who's now 71 with a nice beard and, you know, married son and grandkids, but the legacy continues. That's the genius of living well in the world. You could become healthier, wealthier, and wiser by listening carefully to what Hubie Jones is talking to us about. So I just wanted to put that back in context, and let's go back deep into Hubie.
Well, I think the thing that's important is that, and I think you made it, Barry, is that no one gets anything done by themselves. You have to collaborate with other people who share the same passion, the same concerns, who have the same being upset by the things that are not right, that are unjust, and who will stay together, who will hang together long enough to figure out how to get it done. And the thing everybody needs to know, that when you do something, when you decide to do something, do it well. Be reliable, be responsible, be ethical, be compassionate, because that leads to building social capital. And when you have social capital, you can do exactly what I've been able to do, is I've been able to call people together over and over again about a problem, about a real serious civic concern, about an opportunity that needed to be addressed and used. I could call people together and they would come, because I had social capital. They believed I was honest, I was ethical, I was compassionate, and I got things done. So as a result of that, and I've been able to bring people together and be a convener. And out of that, I have been a part of the founding and leadership of at least 25 nonprofit service institutions over my 50-plus years in the Boston community.
Okay. By the way, again,
it all comes from not only doing it, but doing it well. I've been a part of a lot of aborted action groups. People who come together and say, "Yeah, I'm sick and tired of this. I'm going to do so and so, and I'm going to take charge." And then you don't see them 2 weeks later. Okay.
So I want to emphasize. Let me just break in.
So they're saying they're going to do something, and they say, "Well, I didn't get it done because my kid got sick or whatever it is."
Right. There are no excuses. So let me just recap something that you said, Hugh, because it's just so, it's imperative for people to know this. finding something that's not right, many people can do. Complaining about it, most people can do. But exactly. Doing something about it, doing as Hubie emphasized here, do it well, be reliable, responsible, ethical, and compassionate, and you will create the most valuable currency in the world. The most valuable currency in the world is not the United States dollar. Very good. It's not gold. Very good. Not platinum, diamonds. It is social capital, because social capital can bring together some of the most interesting people in the world. People Hubie has dealt with, presidents of the United States. He was a trustee of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute for 10 years, a trustee of the Foley Hoag Foundation 25 years. He was as a panelist on 515, which is a public affairs program in WCVB-TV in Boston. He has an honorary doctorate degree from Northeastern, University of Maryland, Lesley University, Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, and the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology. Not only is he a doctor of letters, he is a Bill Gates, a Bezos, and a Rockefeller all rolled into the one. And as I said, because he's married, he's concerned, he knows that life is to be lived inspirationally. He is a man driven by purpose. He is a true madman. Makes a difference. You know that you're mad. You know that, Hubie, right? Go make a difference.
I am angry. I'm angry about injustice. Okay.
Yeah.
The thing that I've been fortunate to do is I found a way to take my anger and translate it into energy to pursue constructive change.
Wait a minute. This is genius. I want to ask you. I want to go deep into something.
That's the thing that I've been able to do.
So this is.
I used to tell my students when the School of Social Work.
Yes.
If you're not in touch with your anger about what's going on in this society, and in many parts of the world, at least twice a week, you're in danger of losing your mental health.
Very good.
Okay, you're in danger of losing your mental health.
But as you say, channel. Let's channel that anger and rage. By the way, you see in the word anger, you have the word rage.
Yep.
And you're going to channel that anger and rage and range it into energy so that it becomes positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. And then you can build social capital that can be translated into enormously beneficial programs. I'd like to ask my friend Hubie Jones a personal question. Hubie, tell us a little bit about your background as a kid. What were you like at 15? Where do you come from?
I grew up in the South Bronx in a very difficult neighborhood. By the time I was a teenager, it was overrun with the drug traffic and teenage gangs. So I had to be able to find a way to navigate through the mean streets of the South Bronx. But fortunately, the public schools worked. So when I got into schools, I was safe and being well educated. The parks worked because they were well supervised, where I played basketball hours upon end, okay? And so I lived in a house, an apartment building, a tenement, that was once described by the Bronx Home News when they were doing a crusade about sanitation issues in New York. They labeled my house the dirtiest house in the Bronx. Okay?
Yeah. Let me ask you, did you have a mother and a father?
Now I'm going to tell you, yes. I had a mother and a father and five sisters.
Oh, my God.
Five sisters. My father was a Pullman porter for the New York Central Railroad. He also was a member of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, who was led by A. Philip Randolph. Okay?
Yeah.
And my father, who was brilliant, graduated from college as a valedictorian at Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri, wanted to be a doctor, but because it was difficult for a black man back in 1919, when he was graduating from high school, to think about really being a doctor. And the only jobs really available to black men at that time were either the Pullman Company or the U.S. Post Office.
Woo.
as stable jobs. Okay, so my father was a Pullman porter for 44 years, but he was able to use his brains by being a legal advocate for men on Pullman porters who got into trouble or on the road. And so he would take their cases, write briefs, and represent them before the Pullman Company management. And he was very, very, very good at it. So, and I heard a great deal about A. Philip Randolph, who became the Dean of Black Leaders by the
60s.
Mm-hmm. I heard a lot about A. Philip Randolph. In my house, A. Philip Randolph was known as the chief. Okay? The chief mm-hmm. says this, the chief says that. And so I had these images, right? I had a father who was a terrific legal advocate on a volunteer basis, using his brains to be helpful to others. I had a mother who was, at one point, was just a homemaker. And she decided that she would go back to school and get a academic high school degree when my two younger sisters were in high school. And in fact, she graduated from high school with them because when she went to high school, she just got a secretarial degree.
But wait a minute. First of all, isn't this you're smiling right now thinking about your mother graduating high school with your sisters. Is that not
That's right. Is
that not beautiful and sweet and
yeah.
truly that's a home newbie.
And she was working in a daycare center in the kitchen at the time. Okay. Then after she got out of high school, she went to night school at Hunter College.
Wow.
And ultimately got a BA in a bachelor's degree in education. And then they took her out of the kitchen, and she became a nursing school teacher in this daycare center she was in, where she worked in the kitchen. She went on to get a master's degree at night.
No, she didn't.
Yep, and then they made her a supervising teacher. Okay, so she was a very ambitious woman. Okay. As you can see, and so I had these kinds of things going for me, okay, by the time I was 10 years old, my parents made it clear to me that I had a free college education waiting for me at the City College of New York,
and that's because of.
Because it was free. There was no tuition.
City College of New York, when you went there, had no tuition.
No tuition.
In other words, if you had the grades to get in,
that's
you
right.
had to have a certain grade level. Let's call it a B, B plus, whatever it was.
All right, that's right.
If you had the grade level to get in, you could go to one of the better schools in the country, in a public arena. And it was free.
It was free.
Isn't that?
And my parents told me, "It's waiting for you. Just don't mess up, okay? Just study hard. Be successful in high school. Pass the Regents exams, which are these standard exams we had to take.
Right.
Played a major role in whether you got into these institutions, and." And the City College in New York was a big lift for me.
And by the way, let me just say it like this. white and Jewish.
Yep.
It was a big lift for many Jewish kids.
Oh, yeah. In other words,
it was the beautiful thing about CCNY. Again, I'm saying this, you're only a few years older than me now. It's interesting enough. We always stayed the same ages older. But, so you're 86 chronologically, I'm 71, so we can talk about it as mature men. But the point is that CCNY was the ultimate melting, blending pot for people who wanted to better themselves in life. It was. And people played ball together, they did things together, they talked together, because it was, everybody knew that we were here to do and be the best we could be. Am I correct?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Now, I also had the remarkable thing of having Dr. Kenneth B. Clark as my introductory psychology teacher.
Wow.
And he was a famous black social psychologist. And at the time I was in his course, he was head of putting together the brief, in a social science brief for Brown versus the Board of Education.
Oh my gosh, this is wonderful.
So he came into class. So he came into class one day and said, "Look, I don't know if you know this, but I'm." Been part of putting together a social science brief that will document that to separate black kids on the basis of race in public schools is psychologically damaging.
Yes. Okay, I need to interrupt just for one moment because, again, most of the people who are listening are, interestingly enough, under the age of 35. So it's so important for everybody listening, make sure you go to the website, www.barryshore.com, listen again, and look up some of these things that Hubie is talking about. Look up CCNY. Look up Brown versus Board of Education. Look up Dr. Kenneth Clark, and just begin to get a sense of the historical value of what we're working with here, because, again, Hubie is the embodiment, the personification of something he said in the beginning of our show here, and time is going by so fast, empathy. He lives empathy, but he also understands that empathy alone will not create the kind of change that we need. Yes, there's an anger that needs to be put into the recipe, but the anger needs to be channeled into energy. And when you understand that you work together with other people in a responsible manner, and you do things well, and you're ethical, and you're reliable, and compassionate, as we said, you will create the most valuable capital in the world, social capital, and bring about change for tens, if not hundreds of thousands, not in Hubie's case, millions of kids, and not just in one generation, generation after generation after generation. I just want to be clear. Unfortunately, we only have another 6 or 7 minutes, Hubie. So, and we could go on for 6 more shows, but I just want to keep you in this pathway. Just as a quick recap here, the genius of what you're telling us, you grew up in a difficult situation, as difficult as most anybody can have, mean streets of the South Bronx, as you said, but you had 2 great advantages. Number one, you had a loving mother and father. And number two, you had siblings.
5 sisters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's be real.
The 3 older ones were models for me. They paved the way. They were models. They went on to Hunter College, which is also a free.
By the way, this is so important what he's saying. You see, I have a belief that in today's world, as far as we come, we have so much farther to go, because the kinds of models that we have or that kids have are not in their immediate family. Sometimes the models they have are the kinds of models that you can't ever see. In other words, to have as your model a rap singer or a basketball player or a football player or a movie star or whatever, those are interesting, but they're not in what I will call in the realm of being obtainable. Whereas if your sister goes to college, that becomes a role model that's attainable and beneficial. You hear what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I
think... In fact, there's some research that shows that most people that celebrity models is not what most kids use in order to make it to succeed. It's usually family members, coaches, teachers, ministers, other people who are more immediate to you in your life.
Excellent.
Those are the images. Those are the models that make a difference. It's not the celebrity stuff.
And by the way, are kids seeing good, positive, purposeful, pleasant models in their family and their coaches and their ministers still?
Yeah, of course. So yes, a lot of this is happening.
Good.
Even in challenge situations, a lot of this is happening, and this is what has to be nurtured. And anything we can do to nurture it, and particularly for kids who are adolescents, because adolescence is a very difficult period to go through, okay?
Yes.
And you really have to be anchored, okay, in social institutions, such as religious institutions, such as boys and girls clubs, you name it, schools. Those are the things that can help you get through the normal turmoil of adolescence as you begin to find your identity, understanding what you believe, what you really care about, and what you want to become. Okay? And so we have to do a lot to really help young people make this transition from being young people to being adults.
By the way, I love how you phrase that. That's a beautiful term. The normal turmoil of adolescence.
Absolutely.
The norm, it is normal. So, Leo, so let's talk about music and such, because I find that to be one of the most affirming aspects of life. And tell us about the Boston Children's Chorus, because you've been involved with that for now, 17, 18 years, and how that really helps kids who are, as you just said, the normal turmoil of adolescence, how the ability to work together in a choral setting with music and song helps kids.
Well, in 2002, I was really beginning to read some stuff about how the arts are probably the best way to bring young people together across the divide of race, ethnicity, social class, sexual orientation. And so that was in my head as I went to a city year national convention and saw and heard the Chicago Children's Choir, a group of mostly high school kids who came onto the stage, sang at a level of excellence that blew me away. And I said, oh my goodness, this may be the model I've been looking for. I have tried other ways, through camping, through after-school programs, you name it, to try to bring young people together across these divides and have effective, authentic social integration. And I had limited success. And then I saw this model, and I then said, let's see if we could do it in Boston. And so I brought a group of people together. Here you go again, being a convener, calling people together, saying, shouldn't we have something like this? And putting together a board, raising some money. And we started with, 2003, we started with 30 kids. We started with 30 kids, and in January 2004, the Chicago Children's Choir came to Boston to sing at our first annual Martin Luther King Jr. concert. And I wanted Chicago to come to help Boston see what it was we could build. They came and blew Boston away. Sang at Jordan Hall, which you know, Barry, is one of the great conservatory halls.
Right.
And that was the beginning. So we now have over 500 kids in 13 choirs, and we have achieved really terrific social integration of a diverse group of kids. They come from 120 zip codes. And the thing that I'm most proud of is that we have used this organization to give kids an opportunity to talk about the things they care about in their lives. So there's no rehearsal that goes on where before they start doing their singing stuff, where they don't have an opportunity to talk about issues of race, ethnicity, mass incarceration, environment, and they basically tell us this is the only place in their life they have that's safe in a loving community to do so. Because when they try to talk about these issues in school, they are shut down.
I hear that.
Now, I want to hear about it.
I'm crying deeply to be, have to say that our time on this session is over. I'm going to ask you in front of hundreds of thousands of people if you'll come back again, if I've earned your love and respect, and hopefully you'll say yes. And I want to just say again, over decades, I've been wondering how can I ever repay Hubie for what he did for me in showing me the way.
This is how you're repaying me, by what you're doing. This radio podcast is a way you're paying back. Big time.
I love you.
Okay, you take care.
1 second, I'm going to hug you in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
I got it. Take care of yourself.
Best wishes. Bye. Remember,
right,
everybody. Thank you. This is the Joy of Living. Barry Shore, your humble host. Go to www.barryshore.com and you'll hear everything about Hubie Jones and what we talked about here. WWW, what a wonderful world. Remember, life, living with purpose. Go mad. Go make a difference and uncover, unlock the secrets of everyday words and terms. Thank you to Harmonize and Network Kindness. Go forth. Live the blessing, spread the seeds of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Go mad. Go make a difference.